Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, if you haven't checked out the Golf Clearance Outlet, then you, I can guarantee you this, are missing out. And if you have, well, you know what we're talking about. Great time to drop in because with all the new equipment released in January, good old Sam at the Golf Clearance Outlet is licking his lips because the stores are chock full of 2023 branded clearance product. And you know, that was a hell of a year for golf equipment, Nick.
You're spot on there, Mark. There's heaps of gear for righties, of course, but as you know, I am a lefty, so there's a heap of gear for lefties as well, and plenty for both men and women. And if you're after a great Prezi idea, you can get gift cards in-store or online.
So if you're looking for great golf gear and great prices, the Golf Clearance Outlet needs to be in your plans to go and check it out. See the team in-store at Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane and Perth, or online, golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. It's that simple, Nick.
Can't wait.
Hang on, Nick. I thought you were righty putting now.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
It's week 13 of the golfing year. And if you're listening to Talk Birdie to me, well, that means Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen have calmed down after Hatgate last week. We're live from the Australian Golf Centre, home of Golf Australia and the PGA of Australia, and we're here thanks to the team at Ping. They'll help you play your best. See your local golf shop or professional to arrange a Ping club fitting. And the Golf Clearance Outlet. They're in Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane and Perth, and online at golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. And by the way, check out their new membership club, GCO Live. Okay, time to hook in. A big show. Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen, the number one Australian golf podcast. This is Talk Birdie to Me.
Why are we playing this stupid thing?
Well, I think before we start the show, we need a resolution to Hatgate. Because you guys were fighting last week and I was very worried about
it. I was only messing around. I was jealous when I saw the hat in the masterclass, though.
Well, I had to rub it in a little bit, didn't I? I mean, come on. You were whining, complaining. I didn't get your hat, but hey,
what's
Mark,
on it? Is it a seagull? What's their little sign? What is it?
It's the bird that they have flying around over there. I'm actually not sure what sort of a bird it is. Right. But hey, Mark, I got a surprise for you.
What?
There you go.
Oh. Hey!
Wow.
Nice colour, too.
I have to clarify. This is not from me, by the way. I didn't want to bring you a hat.
But it's a Tarahiti hat, and it's a beautiful grey one too. I love grey.
It is lovely.
Who's responsible?
So my partner there last week in the member guest, Mark Robertson, heard the podcast, and caught up with him yesterday, and he said, "Look, you know, Mark, obviously he badly wants this hat, doesn't he?" I said, "No, he's not getting one from me." And he said, "Well, I actually bought a couple while I was over there for some friends. I only need one. Here's the other." He said, "Give it to him."
Oh, how good.
Very nice.
He must have thought I had a pinhead. It was a bit small.
It's a bit small? That's okay.
Yeah, I've got a big box head.
You do.
Thank you. Thank you. That's lovely of him. Yeah. And he's welcome at Kingston Heath anytime he wants to come play. That is beautiful. Thank you. And I do love grey. Grey is a great colour.
Well, that's why I got the grey Tarahiti hat as well. Yeah, the darker grey. It goes with everything.
Yeah, it's good.
Beautiful.
I said a couple of weeks ago that I would pop in the Commonwealth, a storied golf course in the Melbourne Sandbelt that is being redone by Tom Doak. I've got some interesting news. Olivia Klein took me around. She's a club champion. She's won a stack of times at Kingston Heath. She works there. And Peter Pakagan.
Oh, come on.
I always call him Peter Pack. So anyway, I'm trying to say that. But Peter Pack's a good bloke.
Yeah.
Super bloke. He organised for me just to get driven around, which was great. The course is fantastic and a monster improvement. And I love every single thing they've done.
Now, I was told Tom Doak is in charge of this, correct?
Tom Doak, it's his company.
Okay.
Brian Slawick He's Tom's number two.
Oh, okay.
And Tom has done a very good job here, and in fact, he will go over and fix up Royal Adelaide. There's a few mistakes made over there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so Brian's going to go over there. He's done an amazing job. There is one bit of controversy, and if you know Commonwealth, it's the 17th hole. It's a really short hole, and there is...
Par four.
Yeah. Tiny little green, and there's a lot of tea tree on the left that some people say should have been heritage listed. That tea tree's gone, but I don't think it matters. I think when you take everything in, what they've done to the water, what they've done to a few holes out the back that weren't as flash as what they could have been, and what they're planning to do with the driving range out the front, it is a huge improvement. They've got the... what are the greens that everyone's going with these days?
Pure Distinction.
They've got the Pure Distinction greens, and they look unbelievable. And if you're a Commonwealth member and you don't know, you're not happy with it, well, I think we should read you the Riot Act, because what has been done is magnificent. The first hole, I was told they're going to go back to a shorter version. They've gone back to a shorter version. The green runs away from you.
Pretty short hole already.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, but now it's, you know, 3-wood for boys.
It's like the first of Victoria now.
Yes, maybe a fraction longer. Okay. And there's a slight dogleg to it, sort of.
Yep, to the right.
Sort of, downhill, and the green runs away from you. What I love about Tom Doak and the way that he works is that there are no greens that are built up, you know, it's flat at the front, and then there's a big drop-off at the back. There's none of that. He digs a swimming pool, puts the stones in, puts the rocks in, and they're all quite flat greens. You know, there's no... rises.
I've played a few Doak courses where there's some serious big rises.
Yeah, I get that too. But but he's done a lot of that at Commonwealth, and it looks so good. He kept the crossover hole, which is, you know, the 8th, and I think it's the 13th or something. The crossovers are great.
Mm.
He's just done really simple things to improve a plot of land that is magnificent.
Mm.
It's just a beautiful block.
I've played there a couple of times. The holes I haven't quite burnt into my memory. Not that I've got a great memory anyway. But the one thing I loved about the golf club as well was walking through the clubhouse underneath.
Yeah.
It's a little history lesson. And I think you find that at some of the best, well, sandbelt courses, especially here in Melbourne. But I think all the clubs around Australia, what they do with their clubhouses. I mean, I'm also a member at Woodlands and down at the National. And if you look at all these places and you take a walk and you actually take your time just to look at the photos, read the history, it is amazing. Yeah. And they've got some history there at Commonwealth.
Yeah, yeah. I love it when you go to golf courses and the history is dripping off the walls. And, you know, so a long time ago, it's hard to comprehend this, but, you know, Gary Player and Jack Nicklaus, all paid by Schlesinger, they would go into the country. I mean, you go to Albury Wodonga and there are pictures of Jack. You go to Shepparton Golf Club, there's pictures of Jack playing Shepparton Golf Club. He's just up there. And who's he playing? He's playing the pro, the bloke in the pro shop.
A little exhibition match.
Yeah. It would be like whoever's the pro at Shepparton or whoever is the pro at Albury Wodonga or, you know, wherever else, Parks Golf Club, wherever.
Mm.
And you just rag that bloke out and he's playing Tiger Woods.
It's,
you know,
incredible.
That's what it would have been like for these guys.
Well, back in those days, I mean, even further back, I think it was, I'm trying to remember who it was that always said, look, whenever I played an exhibition match at a local course, he always found out who had the course record.
Right.
And if it was the club pro, he made sure never to beat it. It might have been Peter Thompson, it might have been Sam Snead or someone like that going way back, where they used to play these exhibition matches all around the world, basically.
Yeah.
And they would always find out before they teed off, okay, who's got the course record? If it's the local club pro, they made sure they never beat it.
Yeah, isn't that? That's just so good. Yeah.
That's really
If it was actually a member, well, then they were fine to go ahead and do it. But when it's the local club pro, because that's their badge of honour almost at the club, that they have the course record.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really smart.
And Gene Sarazen, I mean, you think how old Gene must have been, but he was out playing all our golf courses as well. You know, they actually just made the effort to come, and obviously a very different world, an extremely different world. But, you know, those little events were probably the PIF money for, you know, that's their version of the Saudi money.
It probably was.
Yeah. It probably was.
Could you imagine that, you know, the top players doing it now? It's just never going to happen.
No, it's ridiculous. So you go back and have a look at Arnold Palmer. I think Arnold Palmer only just tripped over $1 million money earned on the golf course, something like that. Of course, these days, you don't play in a tournament if you're any good. Where third place isn't $1 million.
I remember when I was playing on the PGA Tour, it wasn't a proud moment, but it was a moment where I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. I overtook Jack Nicklaus on the career money list. Only in prize money, definitely not in titles, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But no one has ever got past him, but... It's funny how much they played for back then as to now. It's, we can only say it's out of control.
Well, Peter Pack and also Olivia Klein, thanks so much for taking me out to Commonwealth. We've got a standing invite. It's not finished yet.
Okay.
But when it is absolutely finished, they'd like us to come out and just have a bit of a wander around and play nine holes maybe. But
let's do the podcast from there.
I've booked you in. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yes. They got a beautiful view of the clubhouse too.
Magnificent. Yeah, we'll do the podcast from Commonwealth after playing nine holes.
Any idea how far away they are from finishing?
May.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that's soon.
Yeah, that sticks in my head.
Great.
Yeah, so very, very good. They've got other stuff too, where they're putting the carts on the ground and blah 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 blah. But it's going to be very, very good.
Before we move on, you were talking about Jack just a moment ago. We put a message up on socials a few days ago about the GOAT.
Yes.
Who is the GOAT? Is it Jack? Is it somebody else? A lot of feedback. I just want to give you guys fair warning. Later in the pod, I'm going to put it on you. Who is your GOAT?
Okay.
So think about that. We'll get to that later in the second, after the turn.
Well, as usual, last Wednesday, not long after the pod dropped, news gets out that everyone was fueling their Learjet and going to the Bahamas. And I'm talking about Yasser from the Saudi Arabia. I'm talking about Monahan and his team. Tiger was up there. The bloke who just won with the funny-looking hat. What's his name, Molinari?
Peter Malnati.
Malnati.
You do it on purpose, don't you?
Malnati. Okay. So Malnati, he was over there as well because he's part of the tour policy board.
The player policy board. Yeah. Player Advisory Council. Is that what the PAC or whatever it is?
We've just given it four names.
Yeah. I have no idea what it is.
It's the one that Rory jumped off when it all started.
correct.
So that was of interest because we don't know what's going to happen. Unless, of course, you have a contact. And, of course, I do have a contact.
The source.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So.
This would be good.
My source from Dallas, Texas, has told me that where they're up to and what they're trying to massage, because they know Yasser's not going away. And they all thought Yasser was a delightful man. You know, that's one of the things that they came out. They all believe that he has golf's best interests at heart. Now, there'll be a few people over in America that won't believe that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one might be Eamon Lynch.
Brandel Chamblee.
One might be Brandel Chamblee. They might think otherwise. But when these other people meet Yasser and his team, they really believe that he does have golf's best interests at heart. And can you remember the line that all the players were using? There's a couple of lines. One was they don't want to play so much golf. The other line was when they all signed up, they want to grow the game. Yeah, they want to grow the game. Well, growing the game was always the Grand Prix of golf style circuit. Where they might land is instead of having 16 to 18 around the world, it may just be 10 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be doable because we know that the Americans don't want to travel. So that's my word from my source in Dallas, who has been nothing but accurate, and I've got no reason to believe that he would be lying about any of that stuff. I mean, all that's quite understandable.
So does that mean they're growing the game more in America since they don't want to travel?
Well, I'm trying to put two and two together because I think the Grand Prix will still be the four majors, will still be the Players' Championship, but maybe that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they just travel to Australia. Maybe they travel to somewhere in Asia. Maybe they have a couple of tournaments near the Open Championship so that Americans don't go across just for one. Maybe they go across for three.
Okay.
Maybe it's the Irish Grand Prix and the Scottish Grand Prix and the Open Championship.
Mm. Interesting.
And there's your 10.
Yeah.
If you've got five in the US, though, leaving five for the rest of the world is not a lot. So could they,
well, it's
could
four,
they
go four. Four in the US and the Open Championship.
Of course, yeah. Yep. But could they go year on year off with some of the international ones?
Oh, well, that's yet to be seen. I mean, that all those things could be massaged in. I mean, maybe you have the Irish Open as part of the circuit every second year and the German Grand Prix gets in there. So I'm only using Grand Prix, folks, just so it sounds consistent all the way through. So I hope you don't mind. But that's where they're at. That's less travel, but still reasonably doable. Now, my question is, having a Grand Prix like that, is it worthwhile? I think it, you know, it is. And I think if they did have an Australian Grand Prix and a Japanese Grand Prix and a German Grand Prix, and maybe they are moved around every second year, maybe. I mean, it's a good idea, Dan, actually. It's a very good idea. Maybe you should be teleported into some of these meetings, because if they came every second year to Australia,
Would we
take it?
Have the best.
It would be enormous.
50 or 70 or 80 players in the world come play down here.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. I think, okay, where does the PGA Tour fit in? Where does LIV Golf fit in? Where does the DP World Tour fit in? Are these now becoming, I'm assuming, feeder tours to this Grand Prix Tour?
Don't know.
Now, for those, say it's top 50, for example, top 50 players. They play these 10 Grand Prix events.
Yeah,
they're going to want to play another probably 10 or more events throughout the year, I would imagine. So where do they go play then? Do they just play in the US? Does that then money count from the, you know, the PGA Tour to count for that? How they figure out the structure of this, I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah, no idea. And the other question that's raised in this situation is, if they are allowed back, how do they get back? So it's very easy for the major winners, because they'll still have status.
Yeah.
If you win a major, you've got 5 years, isn't it?
Used to be. Yeah, 5 years.
5 years. My issue would be the Abraham Answers of the world.
Yeah.
So he hasn't won a major. He went across. How does he get back in? I mean, who do they knock out? How do they get Abraham Answer back onto the exempt list in America? Yeah. And I don't think there's any way of doing that.
I don't think there is. Yeah, it's more, they will either have to bite the bullet and go back to Q School or Corn Ferry, or they create another special category, perhaps, like they had this 126 to 150 category back in the day, which, it got you limited starts, but it still had your status on the PGA Tour. They could create a special exemption there, maybe.
Yeah.
But, again, how do you go off the 12th ranked player on LIV to the 36th ranked player? How does that all work?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. So, and like, you know, people like Poulter. How does Poulter get back to America? I mean, even someone like Joachim Niemann, he's a very, very good player, but he hasn't won a major.
No.
So, you know, has he won a tournament? You know, I think he won a tournament in his final year when he went across. So if he's over there for, 2 years, 3 years, then that exemption is out. It's not existent anymore. So I'm just thinking out loud. Could we find room for them on the DP World Tour? Is that, you know, if you haven't got enough status to go straight back and play in America?
Well, they've got the Asian Tour for that, which is what they're doing with all these international series.
Yeah. Or do they free up spots on the DP World Tour? And how would those members feel about?
Not great.
Yeah, so imagine if you're number 100 on the list. Now, it's going to be around that number. Is it 90 or 100 are exempt? I'm not sure. But let's say it's 100, okay? If you're number 98, 99 and 100, and then they say, okay, we've got to give these LIV players somewhere to play, and they knock you out, or you go further down the list of eligibility to play in these events, well, I'd be filthy if I was 98, 99 or 100. And all of a sudden, I've got 15 LIV players in front of me. So that's I imagine that's the biggest issue.
Well, in a way, I think when they first went across, you mentioned a couple of points earlier, play less tournaments, grow the game. For me, both of those points are absolute bollocks.
Yeah.
Okay. Number three that you didn't say was the money, basically. We all know why they went across. It is the money, of course.
The money.
if they wanted to play less events, they wouldn't be playing these Asian Tour events and things like that for world ranking points.
Yeah, but if they wanted to play less events, they can.
Yeah, true.
You only have to, what is it, 13 events? I mean, you only have to
13 play, or 14, yeah.
Maybe, well, let's call it 14. Yeah. You only have to play 14 events a year to keep your card, and keep your, so that your standing on tour is valid. It's pretty simple. If that's all you want to play, you can do it, but you'd want to play well. That's all, to get into the FedEx Cup and everything else.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Oh, you're talking PGA Tour,
PGA
right?
Tour.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's 15 events these
is
days.
Is it 15?
I think.
Yeah.
It always changes.
Yeah. So. Well, I remember back in the day, Seve used to complain because he only ever wanted to play, he only wanted to play eight events, and he was good enough to play eight events and get enough money to finish in the top 120 or whatever it was back in those days. So he would have these huge fights with America. That he only wanted to play eight.
Mm.
But they said, no, you've got to play 13 if you want to be a member of our tour. So that was his big deal.
Yeah.
But if they'll, you know, so I agree. I think to play less, clearly that was rubbish.
Yeah, we know that.
To grow the game, well, I think that was put in their head by the Saudi Arabians because they believe that the Grand Prix and taking the best players around the world was going to grow the game. I think they really believe that for what it's worth. And then, of course, we all know why they went, because it was the money.
Yeah, and look, I can't begrudge many of them for doing it. I mean, it's a hard thing to pass up, that's for sure. But, you know, and you have those players on tour who didn't take the money, they stayed loyal and all that. Now, when they say we're staying loyal, don't worry, they're making pretty good money on the PGA Tour. We know that, obviously, but they played more for the history and all that, and they wanted to, you know, possibly not travel around the world as all the live golfers are. Who knows?
So my next question, because I've never been in the rooms that you've been in over there. If there was something new that was coming to the PGA Tour, you needed somebody capable of selling it to the players. Now, if something like this happened, who on the PGA Tour side of things is capable of selling it to the rest of the membership? Because I put to you, Jay Monahan's not your man.
Oh, definitely not. No.
He's not your man anymore.
No. As far as the players go, it's always Tiger.
So it's Tiger.
Yeah. I mean, if you get in a room with him, it's pretty hard to say no to that guy for sure, given what he's done. Now, does he have the best interests of the tour at heart? I'm pretty sure he does, actually.
I think he does.
Because he wants that legacy that's going to go on for many, many years. So I think he's the man.
If you didn't have... You know, and again, if you've been watching Full Swing too, there's a boys' club there.
I did see it, by the way. Did you? I finally watched it the other day.
All right, we'll get to that in a sec. I'll get your thoughts after this.
I felt for Keegan.
I'll get your thoughts after this. But, you see the boys' club.
Yeah.
Fowler, JT, Spieth, Scheffler's obviously in there.
When you're renting houses with the captain and paying for it.
That was
you got the chef in. I mean,
incredible to watch. Thanks, bad luck, Keegan. My God. Anyway, does Tiger need to get those four on to sell it? Does he just need to get what's the guy called? Molinari, I called him before. What's his name?
Malnati.
Malnati. He won't be, this is judging a book by its cover, but there's no way he can sell it to the rest of them.
Well, he's a tour grinder, that guy, and it was great to see him win, by the way, but he's not the guy to
he's
do it.
He's not the guy.
There is a guy who just came onto the players, whatever the new... LLC, they just formed the Enterprises, right?
Yeah.
There was a new board made up. There's a guy that just came on called Joe Ogilvy. I don't know if you remember that name.
Yeah, I do.
And he's a very, very savvy businessman as well as a fine, outstanding PGA Tour player back in
the day. Regarded.
Yeah, I reckon he might be able to get you in a bunker competition too. He's one of the best I've ever seen.
Wash your mouth out with
Sorry.
Well, fight words.
Goodness me, mate.
Hey, I brought you a cap today. He's always been very well respected amongst the players, and I think has the tour's interest long term in his heart for sure. So I think he might be a potential one as well to help sell it.
Isn't that funny, just on the Ogilvy name? Jeff is also a well respected name. So the two Ogilvys
of
late are two of the most respected players that you mightn't think are respected on those tours.
And I think before Jeff won the US Open, they probably got their names mixed up quite a bit. I used to get called David Hearn a bit as well. There was a Canadian player up there, David Hearn. And every now and then, oh, g'day Mike, as in Mike Weir, because I was left-handed. So.
Yeah.
bizarre.
Well, look, undoubtedly something will break the second this podcast drops. So, if we need to do an emergency podcast, we will. What about Full Swing 2? Just your thoughts.
Oh yeah, first few episodes. I think the first episode was pretty good.
Yep.
After that, it got a little bit. Eh. I mean, I know what it's like in the locker room, so I sort of see. Yep. See all those guys, and then the Ryder Cup I thought was great.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really good insight into how that all went about, and you spoke about the Keegan thing with the boys' club.
Oh.
Jeez, he was hard done by.
Oh.
He was hard done by.
Oh, it broke my heart. The little kid, you know, when Keegan's wife went and gave him a hug.
Yeah, I know.
And the little kid said, what's wrong? Well, I'll tell you what's wrong, kid. Daddy's not one of the boys.
Yeah.
That's why I'm missed out.
You know, I mean, Justin Thomas, I think he played pretty well in the Ryder Cup. Yep. And it was really either him or Keegan, wasn't it? The other guy that was hard done by, I thought, which they didn't mention, was Cameron Young.
Yeah.
And he just finished second last week at the Valspar as well. So
for the seventh time.
Oh, do you see the last hole where he three-putted? He was one behind, I think Malnati birdied 17 to go one-shot lead. And I'm not sure Young knew at that time. And Young was on the green. He had a very smelly putt, though.
Yeah.
It was about 40 feet up and over and left it 10 feet short. And three putted, but
Malnati shot 5 under on the back.
Yeah, I believe.
Yeah, he did.
He had the weirdest thing happen to him on. Hang on, let me think. I think it was 13, the par 4.
I was going to say he had the weirdest thing on his head.
Well,
what was that hat?
Well, my top five is to do with hats later on. Good. So, given it's Hatgate, you know, you've got the hat today, so we have to go the top five route. But he's in the par 4, 13th, and he hit this second shot where he just looked down, going no. You know, he didn't think it was enough. Finished 15 feet away. It was incredible. And then he hits this 15-foot putt, and he looks either up or down, knowing he's left it short, and then he looks up again and it rolls in. I mean, two times in a row where he had no clue what the ball was doing. For a professional golfer, that's very, very unusual.
I watched up to about the 13th hole, and then what I do on a Monday morning, if I'm really interested, and I wanted Cameron Young to win. I wanted him to overcome six second places and... So if you got the PGA Tour app, you go press the button on the bottom which says watch, and then once you're in that page, there's a button you push, it just says audio.
Oh, while you're driving, you're listening.
So you just you're listening. So every single tournament they have radio commentary. It is so good, their radio commentary. I can't believe it. Anyway, apparently, was it the 16th or the 17th hole where he hit it into the greenside rough, and he got a drop.
And yes.
So
he got the sprinkler head.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And you know who gave the ruling?
Steve Rintoul.
Steve Rintoul.
And you know why I know that? Because
you could hear the Aussie voice
in the radio commentary somehow. Just I reckon they've put a microphone under Steve Rintoul's mouth.
Yeah, you could hear it on the TV commentary.
Okay,
so that's where I heard it. And I know Steve, obviously, a lovely guy. He's got a bit of an American twang in his Aussie accent, but he's been over there for years.
Mate, he was there. He was playing on the Nike Tour when I was playing on the Nike Tour in 1994. In fact, I reckon he was a veteran of the Nike Tour in 1994 when I got over there. He was great. He was great to me, too, because he was kind of – he was I think he was coming back and forth from the main tour to the little tour.
Yeah,
because I was the only Aussie playing, but he would sneak back every once in a while. Mm. Him and Jeff Woodland.
Oh,
remember Jeff
Zuma? Yeah, Zuma.
So Jeff Woodland and Steve Rintoul, if they weren't getting into events and wanted to keep going, they would come back and play.
Gotcha.
And they were so nice to be. Steve Rintoul was a superstar.
He's the loveliest guy ever. Yeah. But the finishing part of the golf tournament, it's called the Copperhead Course at Innisbrook.
Yeah,
has the snake pit.
Yeah.
We've got to do a top five of
best names,
hardest finishing holes in world golf. Because 16, 17, 18, those three holes are brutal. And the guy that ended up shooting boatloads on Sunday, he was leading the tournament going into the final round. What was his name? Keith Mitchell.
Yeah.
He went, I think he set the record. He must have set the record for the lowest three-hole stretch.
On the snake pit.
On Saturday. He went birdie. Eagle, hold out on 18
You're
for an eagle.
Joking.
So I'm sure guys have gone birdie, but I don't think anyone's had an eagle plus two other birdies. It was the most amazing finish, and it is a brutal, brutal finish.
Yeah, okay.
Not a great golf course. Another overrated one again. That'll be another top. We got too many top fives.
We got too many top fives. I was going to say what the top five names for a stretch of holes. So I think Amen Corner.
Yeah.
That'd be at the top. You got the Bear Trap. That'd be two.
Snake Pit
three. Mm. Go on, give us two more.
What's Hogan's Alley? Oh, that's only one hole, isn't it?
Yeah.
At Carnoustie.
I still think that counts.
Yeah, true.
Anyway. Yeah, Hogan's Alley. I think he's got two, hasn't he? I think the whole of the golf course in Fort Worth, Colonial.
He's got the Ben Hogan Bridge.
Yeah. Tom Hogan's Bridge.
Tom, or Paul. Paul Hogan. Geez.
Yeah, no, there's two Hogans, Ellie. So there's our top five for a little stretch of hole. Yeah, well, they used to call. Okay. What's that golf course called in Fort Worth?
Colonial.
Colonial.
Yeah.
Colonial. The whole course is Hogan's Alley.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
You just gave Ken Sutcliffe a heart attack, by the way.
Is he still with us, Kenny? Is he still walking upright?
Well, I don't know. I think so. We'll find out during the sermon and have a look.
All right. Well, we'll come back with that news and your top five unusual hats on the 10th tee.
And go and adjust yours. Yours is a bit small at the moment.
Yes, it is. I'll fix that. That's it.
A big head.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Mark, I've been saying for years that Ping help you play your best because that is exactly what they've done for me throughout my entire career. And now I've been having a look at the new Blueprint S and T irons, and boy, they are impressive. So much so that I've got the new Blueprint S irons in my bag at the moment.
So what do you like about them so much? I mean, I've never seen you this excited about a golf club.
Well, I could go through the specs, which are exceptional, but I won't. I will say, though, that if you're looking for more ball speed and if you want to lower your scores, if you want to mix and match and still look great, you should check them out because the new Blueprint S and T irons, they are definitely worth a look.
Nice.
Just book in with your local golf shop or professional to arrange a Ping club fitting.
Hey, Nick, I know you've heard of the Watch My Numbers app. It is brand new and it is going to dominate the golf app scene for a long, long time. If you want to improve your game, you need to know the areas you're doing well in and where you need to improve. And this app will tell you exactly that, Nick.
Yeah, you're spot on, Mark. It's the most powerful database golf app in the world, and it helps analyze and improve your game like never before because it uses real-time data from your rounds and highlights the areas of your game that you want to look at.
You get actionable and usable info in minutes, not hours. That's really important. It's easy to use. You can set up your profile very quickly. I've done mine. And start accessing data and subscriber-only content straight away.
Who's it aimed at?
Well, it's aimed at people who want to improve their game. It's for all levels of every golfer out there. Particularly powerful if you're a mid to low handicapper. But it's great for the elite level and pros as well.
So elite and pros as well. I like that.
Watch My Numbers. Download it from the App Store and turn your bogeys in the birdies.
Thanks to Ping, they'll help you play your best. And the Golf Clearance Outlet, who searched the globe for golf's best deals. This is Talk Birdie to Me. Now back to Nick Ahern and Mark Allen.
Are we recording?
Yep.
So is Kenny alive or not?
Yeah.
Or is it... Who killed Kenny?
Oh, dear.
Kenny's still kicking around. He's 76 years old, born in 1947.
Well, good on you, Kenny. I'm glad you called Ben Hogan's Bridge Tom Hogan's Bridge and got my TV commentary gig going. So I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Top five. Yes, it is. And the top five is in honour of our Valspar winner, Peter Malnati. Not Molinari, yeah. Mark, by the way.
Won twice on the Corn Ferry, and now he's won twice on the big time. So
9 years between wins on the PGA Tour.
Is that right?
Yeah. And you can see how much it meant to him, too, because he was crying in the post-round interview. It was so impressive. But I'm going to firstly start with an apology. Okay, so you could call this a top six. But
apologies are good.
It's an apology for the hat that the iconic Aussie golfer, Peter Senior, used to wear, the Festo.
Oh, the Festo bucket hat.
Bucket hat. Yeah, that was a great one. But
how is the Festo hat not in your top five?
Well, I couldn't quite squeeze it in because
this will be good.
We have some very interesting ones here. There was a hat which was famous, well, made famous by this man. He did some really interesting things. He used to do the sword fighting, if you remember that. Chichi Rodriguez. He had that wonderful Panama fedora-style straw hat. I don't know if you remember that. That beautiful. Was brilliant. Tom Kite used to wear this similar hat. It was more of a Panama for Tom Kite. And the other guy, I don't know if you remember this, Tiger Woods used to wear it as well. Remember, as an amateur?
As a kid.
When he won the U.S. amateur, he had that Panama straw hat on. But Chi-Chi started it all, and he was such a character of the game.
Yeah, did you hear about the newsreader in America who got Chi-Chi Rodriguez's name wrong?
No.
Called him Chi-Chi Rodriguez.
Oh, no. Oh, dear me.
That is funny.
That's like Tommy Aaron or something like that.
That's it.
Oh, dear. That was number five. Number four, the cowboy hat, Shingo Katayama.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the cowboy?
Yeah. Do you know why he wore that hat?
No.
He wore that hat because he felt like he had a fat head.
Really?
And the cowboy hat that went up elongated his fat scone.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. You know, another guy had a fat head was Kevin Na.
Yeah.
Not a fat head. He had a large orb, I'll say that.
Orb.
Monumentous.
That's right.
Anyway.
Hello, Andrew Gaze. He's got the biggest head I've ever seen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, huge. Jeez.
Really?
Huge.
Wow.
Okay. This is like become a sledge fest here.
Yes. Well, you started at me, mate.
Hatgate continues. All right, and then the other, well, I guess, I don't know if you call it a cowboy hat, but the other style in the same sort of thing was the Akubra by Greg Norman, the shark. That's number three.
That was unusual. When he started wearing that, no one had ever seen a hat like that worn on a golf club before, golf course before.
No, it was, and it became obviously iconic. And
Peter McGuinney started wearing it.
Yes.
And do you remember what Peter McGuinney's nickname was?
Macca?
The Hat.
Okay. Just the hat.
They call him the hat. Of course, he ripped it off Greg Norman. So I'm glad you put Greg in there and not Pete.
No, exactly.
G'day, Pete. I know you listen every week.
Number two, that famous, very weird Swedish golfer, Jesper Parnevik, with the upturned cap. You remember that? It was like a cyclist cap, and he flipped the little lid up.
Yeah, and that's where he had the sponsors logo.
Yeah.
Who was it?
It was Titleist for a while.
And then it was the same.
Might have been Cobra, I think.
Yeah, then it was a mob that Ernie Els had.
SAP?
SAP.
That's the one. Yeah, he was a weird dude. Lovely guy, but very weird. He used to chew volcanic dust.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And he used to keep blood in a fridge. And if his game was off, he would go and move the blood in the fridge.
Really?
Yeah, he would get up and shake it up and then put the blood back in the fridge.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, that's right. It's like a
different. Yeah.
Real weird stuff.
I mean, the blood thing's weird, but what do you mean chew volcanic dust? What, just pick it off the ground and...
No, he must have shipped it in from somewhere, and he used to eat it because apparently the nutrients or something was health.
I mean, ship it in. It's not like there's volcanic dust R Us online or something.
Apparently there might be. I don't know. But his father, funnily enough, Jesper was probably the second most famous person in his family, because his father was one of the most famous clowns or comedians in Sweden.
Is that right?
Yeah, very, very famous.
And do you know the link between Jesper Parnevik and Tiger Woods?
The nanny.
The nanny.
Elin
Woods. Yes. So Tiger's first wife was Jesper Parnevik's au pair.
Yeah, there you go.
That's where Tiger first met Elin. That ended well.
Yeah, it did. Not. So that was number two, yes, but number one.
Just because you'd chase your husband with a 7-iron and slam it into the car.
It's not true. She was just trying to get him out.
Okay.
Don't worry.
Okay.
You have your source.
You were a next door neighbor.
We have our source. Yeah, don't worry. You have your source, but we have ours. Number one, one of my favorite caps. I wish I could pull this off. I really could. But
this is the number one.
Yeah, the Ben Hogan.
Oh, yes.
The Ivy cap is what they used to call it. But Payne Stewart wore it to Bryson.
Yeah.
Bryson DeChambeau's been wearing
it. There's an Englishman who wears it.
Harry Hall, yeah, but I could never pull it off because I've tried it a couple of times. And my wife goes,
"Nah."
Sorry.
Well, if you're trying to be sun smart, the peak's not big enough.
It's not big enough. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Tom Watson wore one won an Open Championship. Yeah,
whenever he played over there, I think. Yeah,
through that entire top five, Mark, you were wearing your Tara Edie hat, so you clearly are very happy with it.
No, it feels nice. It's nice when you get a new hat.
It adjusted the size. It looking like it's fitting a bit better now.
We had a message this week from Steve Levi. He's got a story about Peter Lonard that he reckons you guys might find really interesting.
Okay.
Should we call?
I know a few stories about Peter Lonard. I notice you've stopped giving out the hotline number, which is commendable. Well done.
Calm down.
Anyone could call us any time.
Steve speaking.
Oh, g'day, Steve. It's Mark Allen and Nick O'Hearn.
Oh, the number one podcast in Australia, eh?
That's exactly
hey,
right.
Steve.
You're spot on. Now, we're told that you've got a great Peter Lonard story. Now, We've got our finger on the button here, Sport, so it's got to be nice and clean.
It'll be real clean. So,
right.
Obviously, we held a leg of the Legends Pro-Am up here about a month or so ago.
Yeah.
Hang on, where's up here?
Yeah, where's up here?
So, Rich River Golf Club on the Murray River.
Yep.
About 2.5 hours north of Melbourne.
Yes.
So, Pete was a idol of mine growing up. He was hitting his peak form when I was getting right into golf, so... I was strolled out to the 14th just to see where he was and how he was going. I was in between a few work things, so I thought I'd shoot out. He proceeded to hit a nice shot into 14, hold the putt for a birdie. Walked down 15 with him, had a bit of a chat, hit a great drive off 15, another good iron shot to a couple of foot, birdied 15. We get onto the 16th tee box and we're just having a general chat, and I said, oh, how have you found the course? He said, yeah, it's really nice, in pretty good condition. I played it for the New South Wales Open last year and thought I'd come back. It's playing pretty easy. And I very nearly said to him, couldn't have been too easy yesterday because you shot three over, but thought the best of myself and didn't be rude and just let him go ahead. He nearly birdied 16, then birdied 17.
Yes.
Then I had to go do a couple of work things, and I thought, oh, I'll come back and watch the last five or six holes. Got tied up with some work stuff and didn't come back, and he obviously shot 59. So disappointed I didn't get back, but it was great to see some of it.
Unbelievable.
And I think he bogeyed his last hole, which was a par three.
Yeah, so the last hole, which is classed as our 19th, was in play because the par five first is getting a renovation. So it's a quite easy hole, 125 metre, little downhill par three. Very surprised he bogeyed that, but no, it was great. It was great to see him play. Still got the game.
So he shot 73-59. So does that mean that doesn't count as a course record if the first hole was out of play?
I've asked that question myself and I haven't got anything back. So
it's not a course record.
No, they should.
Yeah, the card will be on the wall.
For sure.
But it won't be counted as a course record, okay. Unfortunately. Steve.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Hey, mate, but thanks for that. Hey, how was he when you were talking to him in between shots? He didn't get annoyed or anything?
No, I stayed out of the way. He approached us standing on 16th tee and had a bit of a chat. No, really nice bloke. Couldn't have asked more.
He's probably about 8 or 9 under them at that stage. He's very happy to have a chat.
Yeah, reasonable mood.
He would have been 4 under 3-5 at that stage. He started on the back 9.
Fabulous. Hey, thanks for reliving the story, mate. It's a ripper. And isn't that great when you can speak to legends like Peter Lonnard at these small events right around the country? Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Steve.
Absolutely. Hopefully see you two up there next year.
Good on you, Stevie.
All right. Cheers.
See you guys.
Boys, feedback time.
Yeah, let's go.
And
let's go.
I'm going to get your goat very soon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, first bit of feedback. This is from Mitchell. Mitchell has said, hey guys, Mitch from Southwest Sydney here. I've only been playing golf for 3.5 years. My handicap is now at its lowest, 8.1.
Wow.
Pretty good after 3.5 years.
Great effort. Mm. Unbelievable effort.
I'd like to know if becoming a caddy or studying to become a caddy is a genuine career path. I don't have many connections in the golf world and there's not a lot of info out there. I am a bit of a golf sicko. I watch most PGA Tour events weekly and I listen to your pod as well as some other US-based pods. But any tips or recommendations on how to pursue a career in caddying?
It's a good question. I reckon most of the caddies knew somebody first, got in that way, and then, you know, once that kind of relationship petered out, then, you know, because they were well known, they could get work in other places. It's one of those awkward ones, isn't it?
You know what we'll do? There's a guy locally, Simon Clark.
Yes.
Clarkey. Who helps run Jeff Ogilvie's, you know, golf games and matches and things like that. I think we'll get in touch with him and ask him about it. Because I thought I'd heard recently there was some sort of a website or something for caddies.
There was. There was. A guy reached out, I think it was late last year, and he's starting up a caddy website. I can't remember the details. But maybe it's similar.
Maybe. Yeah, we'll look into it.
When I was caddying, I used to caddy when I was a kid. So I would just turn up on the Monday. Wag school. Turn up on Monday and just stand at the front gate and just ask every single player who came through.
Fantastic. Who's the best player you ever got?
Well, David Ferrity. I used to caddy for David Ferrity. That was gifted to me, though. That was I was about 15 or 16 when that happened. But before then, I had a guy called Ian Roberts.
Yeah.
Now, Roberts was a gun.
He was a pro down in Tasmania for a while, I think. He won the Tassie Open.
But my God, what a hitter of a golf ball he was. He was great fun to caddy for. He had I will say, he had a girl going down either side of the fairway. You know, he was one of those. He was
a rock star.
He was a rock star.
Charisma.
That's exactly what he was. He was a full-on rock star.
Email here from Mick. Hey, guys, is there a difference between early extension and lifting your head up? Are they the same thing? And do you have some tips on how to stop it?
Casting on the downswing,
casting. Casting. That's what it is. Yes, casting. Okay. Casting and lifting your head up. Hmm. Yeah, I think there is. Because I think when your head comes up, it's a result of you trying hard to hit the ball up. And I think that's why you early cast. Mm-hmm. You know, instead of hitting the ball late and hitting down on the ball, you're casting the club or hitting early, trying to help the thing up in the air. Mm. So I think they are linked. And look, I was a high ball caster when I first started the game. And I think the only way out of it is trying to hit low shots, to tell you the truth. You end up just releasing later and later and later because you're trying to hit the ball low instead of trying to hit the ball high.
Yeah. If your head lifts up, you tend to straighten up basically your entire body. So your hips, if anything, move towards the ball. As my wife likes to sometimes call it, humping the ball.
Yeah, that's
right. Because everything's straightening up a little bit. So a good thing to do is to try and keep your butt back on the downswing. And you can actually even put a chair behind you or something, even your golf bag. You just put it behind you and feel as though your butt sort of stays in contact through it. I'm not sure you want to hit balls doing it, but you could do a few rehearsals. Yep. And what that does is it helps you maintain the upper body tilt as you're swinging through the ball. Therefore, you don't stand up. And hopefully, it means you don't early cast.
So many of the best players in the world have worked on that at some point in their career, keeping their bum away from the ball and creating space.
Yep.
So a few days ago, we put a question up about who is the GOAT. We asked Birdie to me listeners, who is their GOAT?
I'm interested to know the results.
Yeah, it's really interesting. We had a massive response. They have voted often and with a variety of names, which is interesting.
A variety of names?
Yeah, lots of names. Yeah,
I would have thought there was only two names.
Yeah. Well, there's not.
Wow.
Honourable mentions. And I think some people may not have been taking this in the spirit with which it was intended.
Okay. Right.
Michael Norton has said he believes the GOAT, Shooter McGavin.
Well, he was pretty good.
Yeah.
He had a great run there for a while.
He did.
Daniel has said Danny Noonan.
Yeah. No.
Ben Hines has said definitely Al Chervik. He brought the game to the next level.
Yeah, he was a money player.
And and Robert has said, Al was ahead of his time. Liv has stolen a lot of his ideas. And Adam Beasley said Chubbs Peterson for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he was going to be the Black Arnold Palmer, according to the movie.
All of those great suggestions. But on a more serious note, once you get past those, we had some really good votes coming in for Gary Player.
Yes.
Calvin Pete, remember him?
Calvin Pete, the straightest hitter of a golf ball the world has ever seen.
He's the GOAT of, as far as driving accuracy goes.
Yep.
Nick Faldo, Arnold Palmer, Mickelson, Bernard Langer.
But Bernard Langer's interesting because I think he only won two Masters. In fact, I'm sure he only won two Masters as far as majors are concerned, but what he did in the seniors is quite amazing.
Yeah, he's the GOAT of the seniors.
He's the GOAT of the seniors.
Yep. He's still incredible.
Yeah, and he's only the GOAT of the seniors over Hale Irwin and then probably Peter Thompson. Peter Thompson only played 1 year and won 9 times in 1 year. He's still the record.
Incredible.
Ridiculous.
Now, I won't read all the comments because there would have been over 100, but I'll give you a couple of interesting ones before I give you the results and get yours. Andrew Huntley has said, the GOAT is so subjective. Best player I saw live, Jack at the Australian in the 80s, but he was past his prime. Mm-hmm. Last year, I loved seeing the big guys that live in Adelaide. That was impressive. I never saw Tiger live. For me, it was the Shark. He was our Tiger Woods. I remember seeing Sharky hitting balls and Steve Williams on the range not moving and catching them with a towel.
I used to catch balls for Faraday, and honestly, I reckon I lost about 5 pounds running around.
And you would have stayed pretty fit.
It was horrible. It was horrible. But at the same time, you know, you had Roger Davis next to Roger Davis's caddy, and what he's saying is right. Steve Williams, he didn't move. He did not move.
Matthew Cross has said, the bear for me, Tiger second, 18 majors versus 15. I hear a lot of young people say Jack had no competition. I think there's recency bias in there. Mm. Tell me who Tiger played against, really. Obviously, except for Nick O'Hearn.
I reckon Ernie Els was pretty good.
Phil was pretty good.
Phil was good.
This comment's a ripper. Carl Dietrich, Norman on his day, Nicklaus in his career, Tiger at Augusta.
Hmm. Well, when do we get a say?
Right after the results.
Right, here, okay. Here we go.
Here's what the listeners said. Number four, Seve.
Ooh.
Okay.
Well, he was a beautiful man to watch. He could shoot 66 or five or seven, five different ways.
Yeah.
He did change the game.
Yep.
Equal number two, and there's a lot of votes involved here, but
equal
we had
number
equal
two.
Number two, Tiger and the Shark.
Right.
Wow.
Okay.
And
okay.
A clear number one, the Golden Bear.
The Bear.
Okay. Jack.
All right.
Yep. That's what the listeners said.
Okay. I think Tiger Woods is clearly the GOAT. Oh, that's my view. And that's only because of the depth of field when he played. And I know Jack played some great players, you know, Trevino, Watson,
player,
Johnny Miller.
Palmer.
Player, Palmer.
Miller.
Great players. But I just don't think in an era where cuts were more or less three over par at regular tour events versus what they are today, I think there's just that the players today are just so much better.
Mm.
So I think winning 15 the way Tiger did and winning four in a row, including a players' championship, no one's ever done that. So I just think Tiger's best golf was the best golf we've ever seen.
Nick?
Yeah, I would agree you on the best golf, but Jack, for me,
yep.
The greatest of all time, given the record and everything. If Tiger had stayed healthy, well, then he would have overtaken Jack.
Yeah.
Now,
what about if Tiger stayed with Butch Harmon?
Well, yeah.
Imagine that. I think he would have won 25
matches. Could have been daylight second, yeah. In a way. But, yeah, I mean, Tiger's the best I've ever played with. I never got to play with Jack, unfortunately, or any of those other, you know. Imagine what Hogan was like back in the day, or Bobby Jones. I mean, I can't believe Bobby Jones' names didn't come up there. Although he retired early, obviously. So it's all subjective, and we'll never know. It's like trying to compare, what, Jordan with LeBron. I mean,
yeah.
That's Jordan for me.
Well, I consider you wrong for saying Jack, and I don't think you'd consider me wrong for saying Tiger, and I think it's the way it should be. You have your opinion, you move on.
What about Shervik?
Shervik?
Yeah, that's wrong.
Well, I'll never. The other thing that makes me laugh more than anything else in that stupid movie is when he pulls the thing off the golf bag and goes, "Well, let's dance." And you look back and the judge misses a shot. He looks back and goes, "The man's a menace."
So that was that
it
was,
just makes me laugh.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. Listeners to the pod have said, Jack, you said Tiger, Mark, you've said Jack, Nick, but I think what we do know is there's no right or wrong.
No, there's no right or wrong.
Just a bit of fun. Wayne has talked about this Hatgate situation, Nick.
Okay.
That was a classless move.
Classless?
Yeah. Classless.
I thought it was a fantastic move.
But you are from Western Australia, so it's not unexpected.
That's right.
Jeez, there's a whack for that's a WA guy for Sandgropers.
That's good.
Youngie wrote in, "A hat from a course you haven't played on is like a tour shirt from a concert you didn't go to. You've got to earn it."
Yes.
There you go.
I kind of agree with that one. Yeah. I saw that one during the week and I was nodding along.
Geert wrote in and said, "If you visited Tara Edie, you would understand that one does get blown away by it and does forget a thing or two."
Mm. Well, I didn't forget. I just didn't get it for him.
Yeah.
Had no intention.
we had a poll up with four options for people about for what the Hatgate punishment should be.
Okay.
Oh, okay. What were the options?
Suspend Nick for one pod.
Yeah, it's a bit harsh.
Give Nick a suspended sentence.
Yeah, I don't mind that.
No crime committed here. Or this is pod ending, the whole thing's got to end. Now,
okay.
7% said, Nick, you should get a one pod suspension.
Oh, geez.
For not getting Mike a hat last week.
Okay. Wow.
10%, this is a bit ordinary, 10% said pod ending. 1 in 10 people want us to stop. 20% said a suspended sentence, and 63% no crime committed.
No crime. There you go.
There you go.
The people have spoken. Okay.
Over to you, sir.
Okay. Ping Global results this week. We saw the funny hat-wearing Peter Malnati on the PGA Tour win the Valspar Championship at the, what was it, Copperhead Course at Innisbrook.
That's it.
It was a real mouthful, that one. It really was. Anyway, two-shot win over Cameron Young. I loved his pause in the backswing. Ooh, remember I did that masterclass on, who was it, Daniel Gale and Matsuyama?
Yeah.
And someone mentioned you missed Young, and I said, yes, I did too, because Cameron Young has that lovely pause.
What happened to Keith Mitchell?
Keith.
I love Keith Mitchell. After three rounds, doing my.
How good's his golf swing?
I'm going to keep my masterclass on his swing.
Okay.
Even though he.
Yeah, he shot 77 final round, unfortunately.
Shot hockey sticks.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't great. Yeah. Pre-tournament favourite, your number one player, Xander Schauffele, as you call him.
Yes,
Xander Schauffele. Shot a final round 65, so he came home strong to finish tied for fifth. On the Aussie front, Aaron Baddeley, another solid week.
Closed he was leading early in the second round.
Yeah, he was. He was up there. Gee, that hair's getting longer too, I think.
The Jesus look.
Yes, it is.
I don't think the Jesus look works.
Well,
that's just my own opinion.
He's still got the close stance and hitting the ball beautifully.
Short swing too these days.
Yeah, a little bit on the short side. But he finished tied for 17th, so a good result there for Bads. On the LPGA Tour, they were at the Fir Hills Sayre Park Championship in California.
Right.
Very windy the final round. I watched a bit of it.
How'd Gabby go?
Well, her mum is from that area, by the way. So, so there's a bit of a local connection there, Anna Marie. And she was staying with her aunt. She had the lead on the ninth hole on the final round.
Yes.
Unfortunately, then made a double. But she came home strong with a couple of birdies, had a chance to get into a playoff on the final hole, but had about a 20-footer and unfortunately couldn't convert. So she finished in a tie for third. A great result for Gabby
Ruffles. Biggest check.
Yeah, it would have been one of the biggest, I think.
It's her biggest check.
Fantastic. Nellie Korda had 7 weeks off. One previously had 7 weeks off, and she comes back and wins again. So apparently 7 weeks off doesn't hurt your golf game.
She needed a break.
She was a bit rusty, she said. Bogeyed the last two holes to force a playoff with Ryan O'Toole, who held a massive putt for par on the final hole to get into the playoff. So, and she almost made my top five hats list, but she was wearing earmuffs, which went around the back. So I couldn't really term that a hat.
So it wasn't a hat as
such. No, she had a tightless visor on and then the earmuffs which went around, which also had tightless on it. So
we need a top five headwear. I reckon Yarmo Sandlin might get in that one.
He had a very strange beanie on at one stage, a woolly one. But for Korda, that's her 10th win on tour, and she's back to number one in the world. And the other connection, funnily enough, during the week was her father, Peter Korda, and Gabby's father, Ray Ruffles, have both won Australian Open tennis titles.
Yeah, that's right.
How's that?
That's amazing.
Ray won the doubles and Peter won the singles, so
ridiculous.
Pretty impressive. Karis Davidson from Ping, given we're in the Ping Global results, she was the only other Aussie to make the cut, unfortunately. Tied for 27th.
That's all right.
A good week there for Karis.
Good Very stuff, good. Karis. She's just creeping up.
Yeah, she's playing some good golf so far.
Her graph's going the right way.
Exactly. On the DP World Tour, they had the Porsche Singapore Classic at Laguna National. You ever played this place?
No. Oh, yes, I have. Yes. I used to play the Singapore Open every year.
Oh, yeah, they used to have the Singapore Masters. I think I might have been leading going to the last round one year and managed to shoot 76 or something like that.
The course looks...
There's a lot of water.
It looks tough. Yeah, it looks tough on the telly.
Yeah, very. I think I had a hole-in-one there too on the 17th. And they had a car there that week, but I did it in the pro-am, not the tournament.
Joking.
So anyway, that was a tough one. But Sweden's Jesper Svensson shot a 9-under-63 with 3 bogeys in his round.
And got into a playoff with a bloke who shot 8-under?
Kiradesh Afribunrat. The finish was unbelievable, Afribunrat. He held this putt on 17. It just slammed into the back for par, and then he made eagle on the final hole to get into the playoff. And it went 3 extra holes, and... Jesper Svensson ended up winning it with a par on the third.
It's good to watch Happy Bunrat. I actually enjoy watching him play when he's playing well.
Got a very long golf swing. But as you said, Dave Micheluzzi had the final round lead, 54-hole lead. Just struggled. Got off to a good start, couple of birdies early, but then sort of fell away. Ended up finishing in a tie for seventh. So he'll learn a lot from that experience, I think, his first 54-hole lead.
Well, he knows he's got the in a European tour event.
Yep.
It's just unfortunate. I think he's the only player over par, like, as far as you go down the leaderboard.
Yeah. No, you learn from those. I mean, you know, there's a bit of pressure on him, playing in the final group, first year on the DP World Tour. He'll be fine next time around.
He's good.
On the Champions Tour, the Hoag Classic Newport Beach in California. It was a week after St. Paddy's Day, I believe, and Paddy Harrington had the win. So the Irish luck continued for an extra week. He had a one-shot win over Tongchai JD. He had a double bogeyed 16 to go one behind, and he birdied the last two to beat him.
So are you kidding me?
Great finish there. Best of the Aussies was David Branson, top 10. He had a tied for ninth.
Good on you.
Cousin Alan, Steve Allen.
Stevie.
Yep, tied for 15th along with Steve Orker. Richard Green tied for 27th. And Greg Chalmers, who top 10 to get into this event. Unfortunately, he didn't top 10. He was tied for 33rd along with Rod Pampling. They were the best of the Aussies.
Just on Paddy Harrington, I love his tips on Twitter. I reckon he's, of all the tour players, because you and I are very good at it, but of all the tour players that are current, his tips make the most sense.
Yeah, no, he can talk too. He can go on and on, but he does a lot of good ones. I think he started them over COVID, and he was doing it out the back of his house.
Have you seen
his
house? How good's the house?
And the practice facility?
He's hitting 5-iron straight over the roof. It's just so good.
Yeah,
unbelievable. I want to go hit balls at his house.
Yeah, wouldn't be not a bad thing.
Yeah.
A shout out here to Ping Australia's Shane Fitzpatrick.
What's Shane done?
So in the Division 2 pennant final at Riverside Oaks in Sydney, he holed out for an eagle on the 19th hole to win the Division 2 pennant for Massey Park over the Mirfield Golf Club.
Imagine the roar of the teammates watching
that. They would have been
going.
The pennant finals are massive wherever you are, and that one was in Sydney. In Division 1, I noticed Concord defeated Avondale 4-3 there. Concord have got a very strong team too, very impressive there. And also while I'm at it, they had the Glenn Joyner Memorial Legends Pro-Am last week at Thaxted Park, which was obviously...
where Glenn grew up.
In Adelaide. Correct. Yep. I used to play the Thaxted Park Pro-Am.
Did you?
When I was playing the South Aussie circuit. It was a lot of fun over there. Some really good courses, Tea Tree Gully, Flagstaff Hill, a lot of... You walk around, especially one course, I think it was called Hyacombe, and I remember one leg was shorter than the other after I finished there because it was so hilly. But anyway, there was a 5-way tie for first 67. That was Brad Burns, Lucien Tinkler, Tim Elliott, Jason Norris, and David Crawford. So I just wanted to make mention of that as we all loved Glenn Joyner.
That hasn't been a year already, surely.
I think it could have been pretty close.
Jeez.
And Loose Head Sprinkler still getting a good, shooting a good score every once in a while.
There's another top five for names I think we need to do at some point as well.
I think we've done nicknames before, and Loose Head Sprinkler was right there.
Oh, we did. Yeah. We did, didn't we? Yeah, that's right. Song You'll Know, Korean Karaoke. I remember that one.
That's it.
That's
right.
Anyway, that's our Ping Global results for this week.
Righto, it is time for this week's Masterclass. And even though he shot 77 in the last round, Keith Mitchell, when you watch this bloke play, it is such a delight to see a golf swing that has the rhythm and kind of some old school fundamentals thrown in there. Now, what I love about his golf swing more than anything is I love the fact, now you've got to listen to the terminology, I'm not going to say that his head stays still because you don't want your head to be still, because if your head stays still, your shoulders can't rotate. Your noggin's got to turn back a little bit. But I would bet my life that at some stage, Keith Mitchell has been working on keeping his head in the, how can I say this? It's almost the cog in his swing where everything just rotates around his neck and head. It's just beautiful to watch. My dad used to take me down to watch Graham Marsh play, who we're going to get in the pot at some stage as a bonus. My dad said, look, you could put a glass of water on his head and it wouldn't move. Now, Graham Marsh had the stillest head ever, and his whole body would just rotate around it. But if you feel like you're moving all over the place, you don't want to keep your head still, but you want to keep your head in the same place. And it's just a beautiful way to play your golf. Now, you might lose a bit of yardage off the tee, although Keith Mitchell doesn't. He bangs it. He's one of the big, he's a banger out there. But I just think keeping your head still all the way through into your follow through is a nice way to play golf. And if you're having trouble, if you're struggling, go back and have a look at Keith Mitchell's swing. It's a thing of beauty. And, you know, he keeps his angles in the follow-through, and he keeps his angle in that follow-through because he keeps his head in the same place. His head's not still. It just stays in the same place.
So you could do it by the old, the Jack Grout method, who used to grab Jack Nicklaus's hair.
Yes.
And he used to say, swing now, and he'd just grab hold of his hair so his head couldn't move. And if you ever watch Jack Nicklaus play, his head did not move. He had a little cock to the side.
I wonder if that's why he had the cock, because, you know, if Jack was holding his hair, you know, your head does have to turn back.
Has to turn a little.
The nose has to turn back a little bit, otherwise your shoulders can't turn. So maybe Jack said, hey, Jack, hold it on the side a little bit, and maybe that's what got his little head tilt started.
I think you're probably right. We may have uncovered the secret.
I hope that's true.
Now, before we wrap up, later in the week, on Thursday, we're going to have a bonus pod with
Tricky Fowler.
With Tricky Fowler.
Yep. Not about his career. This is about short game.
Short game.
And just talking about short game, talking about chipping comps with Seve Ballesteros. I'm going to ask him. I play with him, and as I've told you guys on this pod before, the greatest shot I've ever seen. Chucky hit. I wonder if he remembers it. It was at Royal Canberra. So we'll get to the bottom of that later in the week.
So that'll be out on Thursday this week.
Beauty.
Yep.
Okay.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers.
Thanks for being part of Talk Birdie to Me with Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen. And if you want to be part of the show, drop us a message or comment on the socials. Or you can send an email or leave a voicemail at talkbirdietome.com.au. Thanks to the great team at Ping, they're the best in the business and they'll help you play your best. And the Golf Clearance Outlet. If you're after top quality at prices you won't beat, check them out. golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. Talk Birdie to Me's executive producer is Dan Bradley at Kaizen Media. Sound design, Daryl Misson at loudzebra.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.